You're listening to Earnestly Speaking, the only weekly podcast that covers friends, foes, and anything that goes. And now, for your badass host, Ernest Owens. And we're back with another episode of Earnestly Speaking with your host, Ernest Owens, myself. Well, it's a new month. It's February, which you already know, because I've just been giving you all episodes after episodes. Like, I'm just dropping albums like Taylor Swift. You know, I'm just going to keep just giving y'all album y'all asked for and giving y'all more and special editions because, you know, why not? I'm joking. But seriously, this week is loaded with tons of content because, one, I'm committed to honoring my flow of my episodes, you know, but also recognizing that big things are happening, right? Like we're doing, you know, Earnestly Speaking Live at the Hard Rock Cafe with the Lip Brothers, of course. It's going to be a special edition episode, which if you have not listened to the previous special edition episode, then you got plenty of content this week, okay? You all just got the Grammy special edition episode, which I saw a ton of you listen to in the first, like, 24 hours. It's been crazy. Now you're getting this episode, which is the weekly episode, which traditionally you will get on a Monday. But jet lag, I need to rest. And I wanted y'all to soak in the Grammy content. And now you're getting this episode. And then you're going to get later this week the special edition episode of Earnestly Speaking, which will be the Hard Rock Live interview that I'm going to be doing with my Lip Brothers live. So for you all who are listening to this podcast episode, I know you all are excited about what's to come this week. So lots of content, lots to do. You know, I'm grateful for it. So I'm, you know, fully recovered from my jet lag because LA definitely was doing a number. I took some time on Tuesday to just sleep. You know, I did an evening panel, you know, and catching up on everything with the National Urban League. I had an event I had to do, and it was in conversation with my good Judy, Lauren. And that was pleasant, and it was a really good conversation, important conversation. And so that was dope. But I really got a chance to sleep. Because let me tell y'all something. When I recorded that episode after that party, woo, that was the energy. Okay. When I got on that plane, I got a good rest, but it still wasn't hitting because it's something like sleeping in your bed compared to sleeping on a plane. Like, and I did all the things. Like, I didn't feel super, super exhausted because those good quality foam neck things that people, neck pillows or whatever, I highly recommend it. I feel like going on a plane, having that around my neck the entire time, I felt relieved. Like, I didn't feel all the nerves and tension if I didn't have it. And the eye cover or whatever that people put on, those are necessities on a plane. I just want to say that. Like, there have been times where I just was like, oh, I'm too cute for that. But let me tell you something. My neck, my whole metabolism, my whole energy just felt really different with that around my neck. And not the little cheap ones. Get the really good ones, the real plushy foam memory. They call them foam memory ones. Those are high quality, but they are worth it. It made all the difference. It was so good that I was trying to sleep on it in bed. And, you know, that clearly didn't work out. But but it was something that made the difference in my sleep quality on the plane, but also just my overall energy. So that felt good. But no, it was, you know, I'm happy that I've recovered. The memories, my thoughts about the Grammys, all of that good stuff. You know, as news evolve, some of the conversations from what happened in different ways have, of course, evolved. But nonetheless, I said what I said. Bitch, I said what I said. Okay? And I paint the whole town red. but no, I definitely felt that. It's Black History Month. I just want to say that. It's Black History Month. And it's already, we're seeing the best of times and the worst of times. I mean, we're seeing good times in some of the historical history that was made. earlier this week. And then we're also seeing some things that is like, interesting. Like Drake's little leak, which we're not going to entertain or discuss on Earnestly Speaking because it's just not giving it. Okay, maybe I'll give a couple of seconds. What I will say is, I think he leaked it. That's my opinion. I think he leaked his own little nude video. If you haven't seen it, you don't need to see it. My only thoughts about it, because a lot of people are going to ask that question. Girth matters. That's all I'm going to say. It just matters. You know, something long, but without any actual girth. I just, you know, a churro stick or a Polish sausage. You decide. If for what it's worth, I would prefer a medium-sized Polish sausage than a long churro stick. Just if we're talking metaphorically speaking, pencils don't do anything for me in that department. Fortunately, I don't have those problems personally or in my own situation. Thankfully, bless it. But now, you know, I'm just, Also, an observation that was made from another person who saw this video from Drake is that it's giving flaccid, it's giving hard to stay focused. I'm trying to be mature about this very immature topic, but at the end of the day, you all do it with women in sex tapes, which is ridiculous. But this is a rich ass man, and clearly he has no problem wagging his thing for people to see. Moving on. Speaking of things to eat, that's not that. I went to a restaurant in Fishtown that I tried last week before I went off to LA. It was called Hello Vietnam. Shout to them. It's an incredible Vietnamese restaurant in Fishtown or Northern Liberties. I'm going to say Northern Liberties because I always say Fishtown, Northern Liberties, but I've realized that Fishtown, Northern Liberties are very different. See, I don't live over there. So tomato, tomato, right? But this is in Northern Liberties. Want to be accurate. Northern Liberties, which Northern Liberties is next to Fishtown, but the audience and the ambiance is very different. Don't ask me who's better. That's subjective. But in Northern Liberties, there is a restaurant called Hello Vietnam, and that food was great. So I wanted to shout them out. I don't want to take up, my past week, as you all know, was the Grammys. So I spoke a lot about that in the previous episode. So I want to take some time to talk about what's been going on and get to these hot topics because the hot topics are hot and we got a lot to catch up on. So the hot news coming out that everyone's talking about is Trump. Trump, 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 Trump. But there is some tea. Trump does not have presidential immunity. Okay, this is a big deal. I know there's a lot of other distractions or dickstractions, as some people would say, but this is important, okay? The 3-judge panel from the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit wrote in their opinion, okay, we cannot accept former President Trump's claim that a president has unbounded authority to commit crimes that would neutralize the most fundamental check on executive power, the recognition and implementation of election results. For the purpose of this criminal case, former President Trump has become Citizen Trump with all the defenses of any other criminal defendant. Okay? Now, this is a big deal. This loss in court, however, is still a win for his delay strategy because the goal is Trump is trying to delay the whole trial so that he can be able to not have to be found guilty or anything like that before the November 5th presidential election. Now, Trump's team said that the former president respectfully disagrees with the D.C. Circuit's decision and will appeal it. The case could ultimately go to the Supreme Court, where, as you know, the conservatives have a 6-3 majority. Trump has until February 12th, which is less than a week away, to file an appeal. Now, what is being said from his spokesperson, Stephen Chung, is that if immunity is not granted to a president, every future president who leaves office will be immediately indicted by the opposing party. Bullshit. He further says, without complete immunity, a president of the United States would not be able to properly function. Bullshit. Look, we saw what happened with Nixon, y'all. Nixon just dipped, resigned, left. That's the first time in American history we've seen a president just like leave. This could also be the case here. Of course, Nixon got pardoned. But in this regard, right, Trump, it ain't happening, bro. I don't see it happening. The Supreme Court is going to be put in a very precarious situation. Because I hear people thinking that the courts are going to do whatever. The conservatives are going to let Trump have his way. I do have a sense that they won't. Because this is one of those situations where, regardless of how you feel, the Supreme Court has to watch the fuck out, right? These conservatives in the court, the 6-3, the 6 out of 9. Because you do this for Trump, and every single Democrat that you hate, that you want to impeach, that you want to drag out, that you want Republicans to draw, it won't happen. And so the precedent that's going to be set here is acting like a president can do whatever they want, like they're a despot, like they are a complete potentate, like they're a complete dictator. And I don't see that. I don't see the Supreme Court doing it. I don't think the Supreme Court wants to touch it. And honestly, I think the Supreme Court's escape, right, is that one, if it does go to Supreme Court, they will use the precedence of the other courts. And I think they will just let the other courts define it. And then they will just go by what the other courts say. I think that's going to be their saving grace. They don't want to do this. I don't think that the Supreme Court will do it. I think there will be a 5-4. I think that it will go, you know, there's a tipping point here. I think that there will be 4 or 3 that will go in favor of Trump. Clarence Thomas, clearly his wife, Virginia, they are clearly in cahoots, right? They're going to support it. But I can see maybe Kavanaugh, maybe. But I can see some of these justices being like, nah, because this is bigger than Trump. This is bigger than the Conservative Party. This is just fundamental principles. And if they compromise on this, because this is very clear as day, very clear as day, okay, that if this happens, then the other thing can't happen, okay? The constitutionalists, whether they were federalists, whether they were conservatives, they would have never believed that a president should do this. I mean, at this point, Republicans, the Republican conservative philosophy and their identity is over. Like, they don't have an identity at this point. The identity, everything that they believed in, everything that they thought about with less government control, laissez-faire approaches, all of the Reagan-esque political ideologies that have governed them for over 30 years, shit, it's going down the drain in the name of Trump. They're literally acting and doing things that they've accused the Democratic Party of doing and believing in. So I don't see this happening. I don't know if it's going to go to the Supreme Court. I know deep down inside the Supreme Court don't want to decide on this because they're going to publicly have to defy Trump. And if they defy Trump, whether or not he has a guilty verdict or not, that can change the way this Constitution gets discussed. Because at that point, Trump becomes officially citizen. I mean, right now he is, but he's got the appeal. And he's going to try to appeal. He has to file an appeal by February 12th. If he files the appeal, then this goes back up for grabs. But I just don't see him changing it because the logic don't make sense. Because basically the precedent becomes the president can do whatever he want and then become immune. No, you cannot just do whatever you want and then be like, I'm the president. I got to be protected. No, you can't just commit crimes. These are criminal charges. You have been federally charged for breaking the law. And the only reason why you feel like you're entitled to do it is because you're the president of the United States. Bullshit. Okay? Now, even I know checks and balances. And this is a check on executive power. What he's trying to imply is that the executive power, the executive branch, can't get checked. What? The courts, the judicial branch can't check the fucking executive branch? The legislative branch can't do it. The legislative branch can't do it. Then that means the judicial branch. Make it make sense. We have branches of government. People need to get a real big civics studies. We learned this in social studies. We learned this in history. There are checks and balances. And all of these branches get checked by the other. So we're going to see. We're going to see. But it's not looking like we're living in a republic right now, for sure. And we're going to see. But so far, so good. And this is interesting. Trump is getting a lot of hits. You know, the defamation lawsuit, you know, his attempt to try to, you know, fix that didn't happen. He has to pay this woman dozens of millions of dollars, nearly $100 million. But has to pay this woman millions upon millions of dollars in damages. Okay, he's going broke. He's got to pay this woman that, because again, trying to, you know, this defamation suit. She wore her defamation suit. There's nothing he can do. So, I'm focused on that. Another big thing that's gotten me lately is this conversation about Fannie Willis. Now, a lot of you all were asking me, what did I think about this Fannie Willis situation? I wanted to wait before I weighed in. I wanted to see, you know, because there was some gossip. The right-wing media, you know, was definitely spreading rumors, and I didn't want to feed into that until there was more details to come. So, there are details, okay? Fulton County District Attorney Fannie Willis, all right, she's the Georgia prosecutor who indicted Trump and 18 others. She admitted, okay, after weeks, she's been silent. But for weeks, she finally admitted that she was in a romantic relationship. She's in a romantic relationship. So I guess it's current, with a special prosecutor that she hired. Now, over in New York, a court monitor had issued a report. Now, this is according to reporting from Slate, okay? Slate reported on this originally. New York, a court monitor issued a report that found the Trump Organization is still not getting its financials straight. You know, take that in consideration. There's a lot of other issues. But let's get to Fannie Willis. She admitted to dating the special prosecutor, Nathan Wade. He's a black man. You know, last week, she stayed silent for 3 weeks. There was a lot of allegations, but she finally addressed the scandal. She sent a court ordered, you know, 176 page motion. And she basically admitted that she's in a romantic relationship with this special prosecutor. So this is Nathan Wade, who she hired. Ooh, this is messy. Now this motion that she filed, and the fact that she disclosed this was in a separate motion that was filed by an attorney for Mike Roman. Now, Mike Roman is not Trump. Mike Roman is one of the 18 people that was charged in this election interference indictment by Willis. That again, this talks a lot, but a lot of this was making accusations against the DA. You know, Mike Roman had claimed that the relationship between her and Nathan Wade created a conflict of interest, basically her ability to prosecute the case. He is asking for all these charges to be dismissed, and he wants the entire indictment from her DA's office to be thrown out. Yeah, okay, that's a lot. However, you know, even though she admitted to this relationship, she made it very clear in her statement. I'm going to read the statement out loud. She said, "While allegations raised in the various motions are salacious and garnered the media attention they were designated to obtain, none provides this court with any basis upon which to order the relief they seek." That's what she had wrote in her motion. She asserted basically that, you know, she doesn't have any financial personal conflict interest in her prosecution. She said that the motion overall demonstrates basic misunderstandings of rudimentary county and state regulations and provides no legal basis for dismissal of the indictment or disqualification of any member of the prosecution. So she's been dating him. They must be hooking up, right? But she does not think that it prejudices the case. That's what she's saying. You know, all the travel expenses, all the money was roughly divided equally between them. That's what Wade said in a sworn affidavit. that that they did not share any compensation he received from Fulton County with her, with the DA, and that the travel expenses between them were roughly divided equally between them. So they were paying their own way, is what he claims. Now, of course, you know Trump wasn't playing no games. He went on Truth Social and said, that means that this scam is totally discredited and over. But Trump doesn't have a real say. The judge, Scott McAfee, he's going to be the one that's going to determine the upcoming evidentiary hearing, right, that's coming up on February 15th. So next week, a lot is going down. A lot is going down. Stay woke. Stay woke. You know, there's another case going on with Trump. The election interference trial is officially off the calendar right now. A lot of that is because everyone's waiting to see what the U.S. Court of Appeals decided, which they already did. We know that they do. They think the trial is still on, even though the attorney said that Trump is entitled to absolute immunity. Seems like the judge is not feeling that. The former president basically could have his appeal reconsidered, which is what he's trying to do, or he's going to send it to the Supreme Court, which is going to delay the process, which is what Trump really wanted to do in this situation. But shit is going down. Another court monitor is saying the Trump Organization is still doing operational errors. There's still some red flags. Apparently, financial documents prepared are lacking in completeness and timeliness, is what the monitor is telling people. This is Monitor Barbara Jones. They're basically saying that there's still issues over there. Now, this is the situation with the Trump Organization. And basically, the attorney general is asking Jones to continue to monitor the Trump Organization for years to come, in addition to the $370 million penalty and having Trump banned from doing business in New York. So he's fucked. He can't do business in New York anymore, which is pretty much, you know, a moot point. And he has a $370 million penalty. So if you keep it up with the math, I'm counting up with the money he owes for the defamation. This is $450 million. That is, you know, you add that amount of money from the defamation case, plus the $370 million penalty for, you know, the situation that happened with the fraud, with the civil fraud case. It's a mess. But apparently, Judge Igrogon is expected to announce his verdict of Trump's civil fraud trial any day now. So people are waiting to see what's happening there. But a lot is going on. You know, it's a lot is going on. You know, it's a lot. The sad part is, for me, is that even though this case is going on, it is getting a little weird because you just don't know. I mean, I don't know when any of these verdicts are going to come before the trial. So it's like Trump is trying to run the clock, but I don't know how voters are going to feel about this. We'll see. Right now, there is a lot of conversations. There is speculation that the RNC chair, Rona McDaniel, is going to step down after the South Carolina primaries, which makes sense. Because there was a lot of bias in some of her rhetoric that she's been saying. They're saying she's going to step down later this month. You know, February 24th is the South Carolina Republican presidential primary. The New York Times has reported that McDaniel, who was the longest serving RNC chair in modern history, apparently told Trump that she will resign after the February 24th South Carolina Republican presidential primary. That is what is being said. It looks like Trump will likely promote her. They're saying Trump will likely aim to promote the North Carolina GOP chair, Michael Whatley, as the successor, would aim to promote. So they would probably want the GOP, the North Carolina GOP chair, Michael Whatley, to succeed McDaniels. That's the narrative. However, the RNC spokesperson, Keith Shipper, has said nothing's changed, claiming that this will be decided after South Carolina. So it's weird. What's going on here? What's happening? Why is Rona leaving? This seems to be weird. Is she trying to be a VP pick? Is it giving VP? Is this going to be Trump's VP pick? You all think maybe? So we'll see. People, it's interesting. People have been very much criticizing her about the RNC's finances. Apparently, they ended 2023 with only $8 million in cash, less than half as much as the Democratic National Committee. So the DNC has about over $16 million. The DNC has 16 million. The RNC has only 8 million cash on hand. Stay woke. Stay woke. These are the things that when I keep telling you all that this whole narrative that Trump has in the bag, he's gonna be the next president. I'm just telling y'all, look at this money. Follow this motherfucking shmoney. Like, follow the money. Because there's some weird things happening right now. And I think a lot of people are not paying attention. Like, they're not paying attention. Which is saying something, right? Like, what's happening here that what's happening? I'm paying attention. We're gonna see what happens February 24th. Because this South Carolina primary, people think that Trump's gonna bury her. She really doesn't want, I mean, what I'm hearing about Nikki Haley, is that she's trying to keep appearing to report South Carolina from ending her campaign. She's really trying to do that. She's doing everything she can not to define her. People say that if Trump wins South Carolina, it's over for her. To be very clear, the Democratic primary has already happened in South Carolina, and of course, not Trump, Biden won outright the primary. I mean, at this point, we know Biden is going to be the nominee. All these people who, I mean, even in primaries where he's not even signing up, he's winning by write-in votes. So, it's Biden. It's Biden, y'all. It's going to be Biden. I mean, any Democratic alternative for the nomination, y'all just need to let that go. So then the question becomes, what about Trump? What about Trump? What about Trump? I just, like I said, I'm listening. I'm observing, but from what I'm gathering, it just looks like Trump, it's going to be some interesting things. I just want to see if Nikki Haley can make it past South Carolina. Because if she keeps staying in the race, it's going to be some interesting conversations. There's going to be some interesting conversations for sure. For sure. So, on to Philly. There's been a lot of conversations. There's a lot of conversations going on. I want to talk about Mayor Sherrell Parker. She's getting heat. It's been, what, a month and a couple of days? And I have some thoughts about some of this press. Helen Ubinas is a columnist at the Philadelphia Inquirer. She wrote an op-ed, criticizing the Parker administration on transparency. There's been a lot of conversations about her communications department, how they've been engaging the press, how, they are not telling everything about certain things, how, there is this, the departments are telling their teams, don't talk to me or press without going through the leadership team first, all of these different types of messaging protocols. And Helen, for whatever reason, is obsessed with really going after the Parker administration very early on about everything. And saying, although, people are trying to give her grace, is what she kind of said in her piece, these should really cause alarm and concerns. Look, I'm all about government accountability and critiquing government. But I think what's frustrating to me is that, I don't, I am, y'all know I have no problem being critical and being skeptical and being, insightful about government and administration. So we ain't gonna act like I am a shrill for this administration when I say this. We're not gonna act like, oh, look at Ernest, you know, kissing, you know, Parker's ass. We ain't gonna do all that here. Because let me tell y'all something. When I go, I go. And there's no going back. One thing about the type of Libra I am, I'm a feral Libra. And what is a feral Libra? A Libra like me is that I'm going to look at everything. I'm going to listen. I'm going to observe. I'm going to watch. Because when I pounce, you ain't taking a lion off the prey. When I pounce, it's a wrap. Don't get it twisted. Don't get it confused at all. Don't be confused by anything that I got going on. Don't be confused. Don't get it twisted. It's for me, it's up. So understand that when I go in, nobody wants to go as far as I go. Nobody takes it as far as I take it. Remember, I was the first to say that Mayor Kenney should resign, the police commissioner should resign. I did that after observing several of flaws in both of those administrations. And when I said that, everybody was talking shit and being critical, never was ready to say these people should go. So when I make a declaration, when I go in, when I criticize something, please understand that I have considered all factors, that I have thought this through, that I considered the optics, that I am being fair, that I was judicial, and there was many opportunities for a person to clean up what they were doing before they did it. That is called fairness. And journalism is about fair and balance, motherfucker. Fairness and balance. That's what I teach my students. That's what I teach people. You got to be fair and you got to be balanced. And what I'm getting annoyed with right now is the lack of fairness and a lack of motherfucking balance that I'm hearing from certain people in the press that is going after Parker. Let me be very clear. I did not read no smoke from y'all about Kenney. 8 years Kenney was in office, and the most criticism he got in the press was in his final fucking year. And even then, people did not go as hard as they could have gone. Period. Did not hear a fucking thing. Like, Kenney got the skate on all types of shit. The tear gassing, the hires, the picks, the corruption, the Johnny Doc, the fact that he never said nothing about Jock, and no one ever really held him accountable for that. The fact that he was a fucking lame duck on his first term. The second term, he was completely absent. Like, there was no smoke for Kenney on none of this shit. None. So I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it. You want to talk about transparency? You want to talk about press? No one said nothing when I was not on the fucking press list. Okay? I was on no press list. He was barring one of the publications I was writing for him. He literally had to be reminded of the Sunshine Act when he was trying to prevent the Philadelphia Magazine from being able to cover and ask questions with the administration. Like, he did all that shit. And he did not get none of scrutiny. And in the shit that y'all trying to do at Sherelle, what, a month in? Give me a fucking break. So here's my thoughts about a lot of this stuff, okay? First of all, she is a Black woman coming into this position in the middle of a fucked up administration. She's inheriting an administration that literally is fucked up. And like, what I mean by fucked up, it is structurally, bureaucratically, systemically, institutionally a hot fucking mess. And anybody who actually covers government, anybody who actually talks to politicians and people who work in those governmental offices know what the hell Sherelle Parker walked into. They know. Anybody who do. So it's annoying that there's people that call themselves columnists and reporters and don't fucking know the optics of how government works. You know fucking nothing about how government runs and operates. And as somebody who has worked in government, somebody who has a husband that's in government, somebody that has a brother that interned in government, we three know more than your ass, and you've been a columnist for how many years? So let's break this down. Because I am sick of it. I am sick of it. I am annoyed. Because all the smoke that you all are giving Mayor Parker, you did not give Kenney this much in this short time period. This man allowed for people to get tear gas. This man is set up and did a lot of dumb shit. This man didn't want to be mayor. And I didn't see not all of this smoke and energy for him. Always an acquiesce. Always a turn a blind eye. This woman gets in this position for a month and you all are, this is a sign for this. Shut the fuck up. I have never seen so many people. The city is in a moment of transition. Okay? Transition. And have you noticed politically that every time Black women get elected to office, they have to clean up the shit from their predecessor. And oftentimes the predecessor is a man. And oftentimes it's a white man. And they have to come in and they have to clean up all the shit. So here's the thing. Just playing something to consider. If I was the mayor of Philadelphia and I was in Sherelle Parker's position, the first thing I would do is tighten up my fucking offices. Everybody to shut the fuck up. We ain't leaking nothing. Let's get on one accord. Let's all have a centralized way of communication. Let all the chairs, department people do what they need to do. Let's not put out misinformation. Let's thoroughly check our shit. Let's not speak out of turn. Let's not overtalk each other. Let all of the respective directors and commissioners and all the people have a chain of conversation and command. Corporations do this, y'all. You know, nonprofits do this. Hell, newsrooms do this. It's funny that Helen Bean has got all this smoke for the Sherelle Parker administration, but where's that smoke in your own fucking office? And don't get on me about any of the newsrooms I work for, because baby, I work for myself, okay? I am the CEO of Ernest Media Empire, and I know where my chain of command is. I look to my left, I look to my right. I decide when to shut the fuck up and when not to. That's my protocol. But if you want to talk about it, this is no different from any type of organizational structure. If I am starting a position and I know that people on day one are ready to put a target on my back, the first thing I'm going to do is make sure that no one on the team is going to go out and say anything that's going to be bad on me. Because if the police commissioner speaks out of turn, if the fire commissioner says something out of concern, right? Then who are y'all going to blame? Sherelle Parker. Y'all going to blame Mayor Parker. Y'all going to say, she needs to get her departments in order. She needs to bring some structure. Well, that's what the fuck structure looks like. Having a chain of command, having everyone on the same accord. And what that means for the press is that we got to understand, okay, we're not going to just know every damn thing, because I would rather them get their situation, their facts in order before you tell me something and it's not true. How many times in the Kennedy administration did you ever see the police commissioner say one thing and then the mayor has to backtrack? That shit was annoying as a reporter. It was annoying to be in a situation where one person was saying one thing, someone else was saying another thing, and then you have to fact check and you have to move your stuff. And then at a certain point, everybody was like, this damn department administration is, what the fuck is going on? You all, some journalists, dumb journalists, respectfully, dumb journalists, seem not to understand how we talk ourselves in circles and hypocrisy. I fucking don't, but some of these people do. And what pisses me off about it is that you'll see these people get into these conversations about organization and structure. So they'll say, okay, well, you know, well, this administration is saying, okay, We're gonna talk about this, but we're not gonna talk about this, right? We saw this with the Kennedy administration, where there would be people leaking information, and then reporters would jump on it and run with it, and you know, sometimes there was truth there, and then sometimes there wasn't truth there, and then as a result, there will be mixed signals, and guess who got fucked? The public did, the communities did, and so I can right now appreciate the fact that there is some level of streamlined communication, because whether they're wrong or they're right, if they come together and give out misinformation, we can then say that was a lie or there was no truth there, or we can be patient and we can wait for the truth. There was a lot of conversations about the shooting incident that involved a Black man and an incident with a gun shuffle between police. The police department did not share and overshare information out to the public about it. They spoke on what they know, and they didn't share what they did not have confirmed. And there were people that was upset about that, but I'm like, if it's a pending case, if there's going to be a trial, if there's going to be an investigation, Do you think they're going to want to put themselves in a position where they're going to misspeak and create more confusion? We saw what happened when former police commissioner Daniel Outlaw literally tried to act like the I-70, the protesters were out there throwing things. She lied. Whatever correspondence and information that she got that day, right, in 2020, in June of 2020, right, when that tear gassing went down, whatever information she got was wrong. And when the videos and the journalists proved that she was wrong, then they had to backtrack and apologize. I don't think Mayor Parker wants to relive a situation like that if she can afford not to. And quite frankly, I don't blame her. See, being a journalist and being rightfully critical means, yes, you can be able to be upset about things or want for things, but you also have to be able to be strategic and thoughtful and mindful of picking the battles and figuring out how you don't look stupid in the press. Period. So where I stand on this is like, I mean, some of it could be micro, could be viewed as micromanaging, right? There's conversations about libraries, like the messaging from the public library and other city departments that they're going to have to run certain things through the mayor's administration to approve certain things that go out to the public, right? Some of it might feel like it's micromanaging. There's a comms team, you know? Hopefully they're bulking up their communications team. They can hire some good communications people that are qualified and worthy for that job. They have good people. Joe Grace used to be, you know, the spokesperson for the council president, Daryl Clark, former council president Daryl Clark. Now he's in the park administration. There is signs here, right, that there is structure. There's competence there. But they might need to increase their staff. They might need to put more people in there to advise and to recommend. There needs to be other things that might need to happen in those respective departments. However, like I'm saying before, when miscommunication happens, who does it fall on? When the libraries send out misinformation, who do people get on social media and complain about? Who do they blame, even when it's not their fault? Oh, the mayor. So I think this is a mayor who was like, if I'm going to be liable, I need to have more of an approach. I need to have more of an opportunity to be engaged, to be involved. And I do think that as I do predict, in my opinion, I do predict that after the first 90, 100 days or whatever, that once things are in place, I think things will definitely be more fluid. I understand concerns about transparency. As a journalist, trust me, I fucking know. But I'm also a little bit more rational and fair about like, what are we doing? Are we coming in ready to be critical and to start a fight? Or are we actually coming into the situation trying to be knowledgeable? And I feel like this is concerning me about journalism because I'm not a journalist that come in with a personal vendetta or an axe to grind. Now, if things are wrong, then yeah, I'm going to be upset. And yeah, I'm going to come in with the type of response. But I don't feel like I am warranted to come in. I don't feel like this administration is giving me this automatic energy to come in trying to fucking be, you know, like I just, this is not that. And I feel like this is the shit that I was talking about a couple of weeks ago, that, and this is the shit that any black person, anybody who's a trailblazer, a person who has, you know, made history, they know that these are the unfair, unscrupulous, you know, just very lack of balance approach that people apply. And so like I've said to everybody, and I will say it again, I am studying, I'm observing this administration, I'm taking my notes, I'm watching it, I'm observing it, because I understand and I know the optics. I know the optics that if I come out swinging the first 30 days, what am I swinging about? They're trying to get their shit together. They're trying to hire people. They're trying to get their administration together. Like, what am I complaining about? What am I coming in doing? Like, I'm coming in 30 days in with an op-ed just trying to, you know, discourage people from having faith. Like, what the fuck? Like, I just feel like, it, as you know, it, it fair and balanced. But see, this is what I tell people about diversity in newsrooms. Maybe if you had more black women and black men covering politics in a city that we're the plurality, maybe we can see nuances that other people can't see. Maybe we can understand the context behind certain things. Because let me tell you why I just find Helen Ubina specifically interesting in how she's been going after Mayor Parker. So in the summer, when then Democratic mayoral nominee Sherrill Parker was not even mayor-elect, okay, there was this trash-ass op-ed that was trying to embolden, you know, then mayoral, you know, Democratic nominee Parker to take these stances on gun violence and make these declarations. And I was just like, have you lost your fucking mind? Like, the optics of that, right, for those who don't get it, is that if this black woman, who was the nominee, decides to play mayor as the nominee, do you know the backlash that she would have gotten politically and in the media? It would have been, she's getting too big for her britches, acting too soon, Dictator Parker already on the job. Before she could even be with the general, Parker is already acting like she's the mayor. Like, people was all, it's like that would have been a narrative. That would have been a narrative. And for a non-black woman to try to insert and direct and tell this woman, this black woman, how to act in this role, how dare you? How dare you? How dare you throw her out for the lion's den? Because if she would have taken that advice, I already know how they would have came for her. You know how I know? Because on the side of the media's neck, they were already complaining about how she wasn't doing enough press. That, ooh, why is she not doing interviews? Why is she not talking to the press? Does she assume she already has it? You know, she should be doing these interviews. And honestly, to be honest, Parker was like, logically, her mindset was like, I need to focus on trying to figure out the next fucking 4 years because pretty much she was going to win. And she did. But the gag was people thought that by her not actually, you know, preparing, you know, for, you know, by her not, you know, making declarations legislative wise, right, that somehow, you know, she wasn't, you know, demonstrating how she was ready for the job. But then by her not engaging the press on every single interview request that they had, then somehow the logic then becomes that she's not acting like a candidate because she should be acting like a candidate until November of 2023. She should be treating this like it's a competitive race. And just kind of like, which one is it? Because when there was a conversation about, you know, the National Guard, people thought she was already going, you know, too ham on that and going farther beyond what she's supposed to have done. Like, it just kept moving. The goalposts kept moving. And so there needs to be, you know, an intermedia, not intergovernmental, but an intermedia coalition where all the journalists that's in politics should sit down and come to an understanding about like what's fair and what's not and how we cover these administrations. But that's never going to happen. But just hypothetically, right? It's just to me, we all got to be on message and figure out. Like, I'm not saying we all got to agree, but there's got to be some understanding of how government works. And also understanding of like optics that even the best strategists can understand and read. Because otherwise, you should not be writing and talking about politics in this way if you don't know the rudimentary like objectives to how it operates. Like, I'm not going to write a piece and say, let me give an example. Oh, that, you know, the city should do a mandatory gun ban, right? That Mayor Parker, I want a gun ban on assault rifles. She can't make that decision. She needs to go to the state. The state needs to figure out what's going on statewide on it. And then they might have to consider federal, right? But she can't make that decision. So writing pieces that give false pretenses to the public and give the public the wrong impression about how power works and who has actual legalized power is unfair. And so I just think critique is fine. Clearly, I critique everything. I'm critiquing right now. But there's got to be fairness. And so this is a fair critique to someone else in the press. Like, this is a fair critique. As somebody who's criticized elected officials, I study it enough to know, here's what I can critique, and here's what I can't critique. Here's what I know could happen, and here's what I know that can't happen. And I think too often, there are people that are just lazy in their approach, lazy in their coverage, lazy in the way that they speak to these issues. And that ends up having the public not trust us as journalists, because they begin to realize, like, okay, why are you setting up, you know, unrealistic expectations on this administration? Why is, like, a little over 30 days of her being sworn in as mayor, we're already acting like she needs to do all these things and turn water into wine like she's Jesus Christ? Like, at some point, you have to take a step back and realize, why are we uploading all this? Do we not know how process works? Do we not know how our government works? And to be quite honest, what she's been able to do in her first 30 days, to be honest, has been quite fast. Now, I do think, to be fair, that one can look and be critical about some of the appointments. That there is healthy cynicism and skepticism of, okay, you said there was a nationwide search, but so many people that are getting appointed to these top positions are coming close to you. And one could argue that one of, you know, Mayor Parker's strengths and weaknesses is that she's loyal to a default. Loyalty's big on her. And sometimes when these decisions are being made, are they being made, you know, are these people qualified? Sure, I think some of them are. I think that the city representative, who just so happens to be Curtis Jones's wife, is qualified for city representative. But, you know, it's a little close to home, right? But these nuances, right? People got to look into them. People got to. But again, these are things that we got to see evolve. Time will tell if these appointments are going to live up to the expectation that we have for those roles. But we got to see things play out. I think jumping the gun and already, you know, going off the wires and already coming with a doomsday is just not a good way to start this, in my opinion. But when you're at a publication that is struggling to gain an audience, struggling to engage diverse readership across the city, struggling to have an identity after several blunders and hires, DEI, and just overall newsroom management, this is the type of shit that gets published. That's all I have to say. Now, to be fair and balanced, the Inquirer did write a really good story, moving on, about Sheriff Rochelle Bilow. William Bender, who's a reporter there, did this major find, definitely scoop, finding out that basically Rochelle Bilow campaign made up dozens of false news stories. That's the question. People are thinking that a campaign staffer, potentially as a theory, could have used an AI chatbot to generate these headlines about the sheriff and posted them on her website. Now, there's some weirdness here. The website, you know, now let me be clear. The campaign website has removed all of these weird headlines and press. However, you know, this is weird. So, the campaign website had apparently dozens of favorable headlines that was attributed to local news organizations, NBC 10, CBS 3, WHYY, and the Inquirer, all listing the dates of publication. But the gag is that when people looked on these pages, they did not find any of the stories that was being claimed to be written about Bilow. Like, none of these stories. And spokesperson for these publications confirmed it. So NBC 10, their spokesperson, said her digital team could not locate any of the stories that Bilow's team claims it ran about her during the 2019 election. You know, stuff about police reform initiatives, distribution of free gun locks, suspension of evictions. This is all being reported in the Inquirer story. none of this was found, you know. The gag is that the spokesperson said that NBC 10 had run several stories on evictions being halted, but the sheriff specifically was not mentioning any of them. They did do a segment on her victory, but that doesn't match the headline or the 2019 date that was given on Bilal's campaign website. Like, the confirmations are there. Now, her spokesperson, the infamous Teresa Lundy, and I say infamous because at this point, Ms. Lundy has been consistently found in the crosshairs in the press defending Bilal consistently in ways that people have found weird. There's been accusations about her connections with projects related to the sheriff's office. She's been in the news a lot. And, you know, full disclosure, she has been very critical of my coverage of Bilal. I will speak very transparently and say that, you know, I went to WRD, you know, I was hosting an election special for WRD at South, and I was there. And it was Election Day special where we interviewed candidates and things. And Lundy and Bilal were sitting at a table while I was in line. My family was getting food or going back in. And they were taunting me. They were like, four more years. And, basically, making little jabs at me and throwing shots about me being a journalist and, you know, making those little remarks. And, you know, it's fine. Because at the end of the day, I made it very clear to Ms. Lundy when I saw her sitting there, I'm still here too. And we'll see if you all will make it these 4 years politically. They can say what they want, but at the end of the day, the reporting I did on the FBI investigation, no corrections was on that story. That story was not taken down. That story is still running. You could still find that story. All of my sources were legitimate. There, some of them still work at the sheriff's office. Rochelle Bilal refused to give me a direct comment. Her spokesperson, Teresa Lundy, who was not a full-time employee for the sheriff's office, but on a separate contract, which has been ridiculed, right? That the sheriff's office can give out these individual contracts to people to do jobs that could traditionally go work for the office. And there's a double dipping that you can just contract the worker. So TML, whatever it's called, TML Comms or whatever the company is named, she could work there, have a contract there, but it can also work on political campaigns and do other things, which is, interesting. Other city employees cannot do that. The fact that the sheriff's office has this like ridiculous way of spending money and not running any of their contracts or bids or anything through the city, the fact that there's a lack of transparency there is a red flag, in my opinion. And it's been discussed. There's been concerns. There has been a controller's audit when former city controller Rebecca Reinhart talked about some of the gross, concerning behavior that's been taking place in that administration. But let's be clear, Rochelle Bilal will admit to you that there's been scandal after scandal after scandal. Oh, not in her office, but, by her predecessors. When she was throwing those shots at Jewel Williams, who was, her predecessor, right? Which was true. He had scandals. Now her office has been littered with scandals. And she was reelected, right? But at the end of the day, the identity politics for why she has stayed in that seat is very telling. That people often say, I can't criticize a Black woman running for office. Listen, the types of concerning things that have consistently come out of Rochelle Bilal's office is just hard to ignore. And it's not Rochelle Bilal, to be clear. It's not simply Rochelle Bilal. It's the nature of that office. That office is a trap for anybody who gets in that seat. And rightfully so, there's a lot of concerns. So there's just been a lot of issues. When she was asked, because she identified, she did not respond to requests for comments. Bilal didn't. Her spokesperson referred questions to Bilal's campaign manager, but said she could not identify that person. She says, "I don't know that information," is what she said. I find that interesting because she was literally with Bilal the day of Bilal's reelection. The campaign manager was present. You know who the campaign manager is. That's just a lie. It's a lie. And she has lied before. She has lied to the press about when she was, you know, I guess working or advocating for Janie Blackwell, when Janie Blackwell ran for re-election and lost in 2019, she was over there, you know, telling the press ridiculous rumors about some of the black activists that I knew who protested at the Enterprise Center. And she was lying about details. And there were certain things that she told the press. And she just was lying. And so I have a lot of, I don't have a lot of respect for any spokesperson or comms person that just lies. Like lies, just straight up lies to the press. It's just not becoming, it just lacks integrity. And there were just lies. And if she would want to, at any moment, call me, text me, tell me, where did I lie? I will tell you. I will name them. I will pull out the receipts and say, this right here, what you said, that just wasn't true. This right here say you don't know that information. You cannot identify the campaign manager. That's a lie. That's a lie. It's a lie. So, you know, it's just a lot of credibility. And there's a lot of things I know that I will not say on this podcast because it's not appropriate. But what's understood doesn't have to be said. What's already known don't have to be said. And for any real person in politics, that silence that I gave, if you remember the song Red Ruby Sleeves by Nicki Minaj, which she makes that line, you know, I haven't fucked with horses since Christopher Reeves. And as that little pause, that uh-oh, and as that little pause, that's that let it sit in and let it marinate, and she gets back to her verse. I'm gonna move on to my next verse. So, we'll see what happens here. I mean, this is just another unnecessary, petty, stupid situation. It's just like, what's the point of making up headlines, confusing voters? Like, it's just, what's going on? You know, apparently the Bilal campaign can't vouch for its website's accuracy. You know, it's just, what are we talking about? You know, so there was something said here. On Friday afternoon, Bilal's campaign restored the 31 headlines to the campaign site. However, and added a note to the bottom. Public disclaimer. While we endeavor to keep the information up to date correct, we make no representations or warranties of any kind, express or implied, about the completeness, accuracy, reliability, suitability, or availability with respect to the website or the information provided. What? What? So you can't vouch for the accuracy of the information on your website? It's your website. You can't vouch for the accuracy of it? Like, you can't say, like, the information on your website, you can't vouch for if it's true or not. And it's information from your website that you're giving to the public. That's Trump-like, y'all. Sorry. It's Trump-like. Moving on. So, the governor, okay, our governor, Josh Shapiro, has decided that he wants to legalize weed. He's calling for the legalization of weed in Pennsylvania. Jersey done did it. New York is doing its thing. Philadelphia, are we doing it? Are we doing it? Are we doing it, Pennsylvania? Are we doing it? We'll see. But he's calling for it. He's calling for it. He came out swinging on Tuesday with this big announcement. I mean, he's, you know, I think It's bold, but I'm telling y'all to stay woke because I'm like, what else in this budget do you not want us to know about? Because I find it interesting that he's going as ham as he is. It's kind of weird, in my opinion. Just saying. So the tea is that, you know, I've been following this because I was surprised. So this is what he said. So he says that he put out in a statement. He said, we need to legalize marijuana. We're losing out on an industry that would bring in more than $250 million in annual revenue. And our failure to legalize and regulate marijuana only fuels the black market and drains much needed resources for law enforcement. It's time to catch up. Let's work together to my desk a comprehensive bill that legalizes marijuana under three key conditions. One, it has to prioritize creating good paying jobs. Two, the industry must be regulated and taxed responsibly. And three, there must be a criminal justice component. This is common sense. Let's get it done. Okay, Shapiro, I hear you. I like it. It's interesting. People are asking for things already. Folks are saying they've been, they've been to Denver where it's legalized. They're claiming the air in the entire town smells like a joint. Many people walking around like zombies. You cannot escape the smell. It is everywhere. Bullshit. I don't believe that. Let me say this. I was in LA, you know, where they sell, you know, there's cannabis there. I've been to, you know, Jersey. You know, I know people that's been to Maryland. Like, listen, it's not like that, actually. The gag is that people that are getting high are already getting high. People that got access to weed is already getting weed. People that got access are doing it. If you don't think the girls are going to Jersey to get their shit and then coming back to Philadelphia, girl, what are you talking about? Jersey is making bank, baby. They are getting the coins. The girls in Vegas been on, okay? The shit's been going on, okay? It can be regulated. It can happen. And Pennsylvania can do it. And honestly, let's be real about it. I would like to see in this criminal justice component, to be honest, you know, I don't smoke weed. Like, I just don't. I don't judge people that do, you know, however you do. But I'm not a smoker. I just think the smoking of it it can be annoying sometimes. I remember while I was at the Grammys, I went to a couple of parties and you know, it was some weed in the air. And I was just like, well, damn, I don't want my shit to smell like it. I was like, can we get edibles? Can we ingest the product? Can we do it in a way that don't have all the smell? Shit, I'm wearing Prada. I don't want to smell like, you know. Other than that, though, with the exception of the smell, I mean, it's harmless. It's harmless, people. It's harmless. You know, it's harmless. So I do think, you know, regulation is key. But, you know, people that say this, I'm like, well, what about alcohol? Because motherfuckers out here getting drunk, drinking and driving, but y'all over here worried about cannabis. I just have not heard consistent reports of people that have been consuming cannabis and then all of a sudden crashing. I just have not heard that. But I've heard about drunk driving, though. Belligerent drunk, right? I've heard that. I hear people smelling like nasty-ass Miller Lite at bars trying to holler at my friends and smelling like shit. Yeah, that for sure. But hi, not so much. The criminal justice component for me would be that for people who are currently behind bars for possession of marijuana or even selling marijuana, pardon those people immediately, release those people, let those people get back into the world, and expunge their records. I think that to me is a criminal justice component. Expunge those records for people who have possession, right? You know, I mean, now there was people who had like massive drug selling and some big, huge Congo shit. I mean, if there was something like that, that's a different conversation. But for people who are just got, you know, criminal records and then drug tests, if you want to talk about some real criminal justice reform, stop having drug tests that actually factors in, you know, marijuana. Like, stop it. Like, stop it. Like, people should be able to get drug tests and marijuana consumption should not be in the drug test. Like, that's disgusting. People are not getting jobs. You're fucking over, you know, reentry. Second citizens coming back for a second life over a drug that is recreational in parts of this country. Like, that to me is just unjust. So, you know, yeah, that's some of the stuff I would like to be see changed. And I also would like to see some real competitive economic opportunity for those people who've been in this space. Because what we're hearing in other states is that the rich, the super rich, get to now capitalize off of cannabis. But those people from these neighborhoods that was selling, that was dealing with these issues, they, you know, they don't get to benefit from these new opportunities, these new jobs. So there was a way to figure out how to give people economic opportunities and resources from this. I think that would be, to me, a major start, in my opinion. That would be a major deal for me. Just saying. So yeah. Getting into the media, okay? So there's been some chatter, and y'all have been following what I've been saying. Y'all have been hitting me up in the DMs like, yo, what's going on with this goddamn shit with Charmaine the God, the Breakfast Club? So Jess Hilarious just got confirmed for a gig. She's now the third host replacing Angela Yee on the Breakfast Club. So it's obvious the Breakfast Club is not interested in journalism. They never was. They worked it out. Clearly the contract got addressed. I guess the check cleared. The contract got approved. She's now going to be hosting that show. And so it's very telling. It's very telling. And I'm interested to see how it plays out. I'm really interested in seeing it. You know, and it will be very telling. And it's going to be very interesting to see. So let me back up with what's been happening thus far. Nikki Haley got an interview on The Breakfast Club. They talked to Ramaswamy, who was the previous, Republican candidate. But they've been bringing on a lot of Republican candidates. It's been very telling. It's been very telling. And, you know, I'm not surprised at this point because I've been telling y'all for a minute what the tea was over there with that administration. But with that group. And so here we are again, seeing this stuff play out. And all of you all have tried to doubt me and doubt what I've been telling y'all about this team. But here we are. You know, here we are. And it's like I said, it's very, very telling about the stuff that we're seeing and we're witnessing. And the politics and the things that has shaped the conversations that we're seeing, that we're having. I'm just like, why are they getting a platform? But I told y'all, stay woke, because I do really believe some funny business is going on. And I definitely think that Charlamagne's contract, well, his contract is up in 2025, but I don't think the Breakfast Club is going to last after 2025. I think there's going to be some major blowback. There's going to be some major seismic changes. You can feel it. You can sense it. And he's pivoting into other iHeart Media projects. That he has, like, Black Effect Podcast Network. He's collaborating with that flop-ass podcast, Native Land, which has finally flopped. Like, it came and it went. Like, I knew it was going to happen. I knew people was not going to be here for the antics. Like, it had its first big moment, but now it seems to be just plateauing. Like, the energy is just not there. There was buzz about it, but ever since, you know, the initial buzz, it's kind of just has faded into obscurity. It's not on the charts, you know, anymore. We're not hearing anything about it. Which is just telling. They all, you know, I feel like people listen to the first, like, episodes to get the mess, you know. But now I think people are, like, a little bored. I think everybody wanted to hear their first three, because the first three episodes, they kind of introduced themselves and talked about what happened to them and their drama. But then after that, I think everybody's kind of like, okay, I don't really care about their other thoughts. And their takes have been really just dry and basic, or just, like, contradictory just for no reason. But I also want to talk about this special that just aired about Black men in America, the one that was on MSNBC that had Tremaine Lee and the other guy. I got a chance to watch it. Other people have been very critical about it. And, you know, look, here's my thoughts. I have mixed thoughts about it. I didn't absolutely hate it, but I also wasn't in love with it, because I've been having some real conversations with other Black men. and other black people about this election. And I'm going to tell y'all some things that I would never say anywhere else. Well, maybe, but this podcast feels right. They were on there talking, and some of the black men on there was saying some shit about Trump, you know, irritating Trump about being a businessman, all this shit. Then there were some people, you know, acting like they were undecided about the election, if they were going to vote or not. There was all these weird conversations, these questions being had. And I was really disappointed in it because I felt like it was a little bit more nuanced. There was a lot more conversation dialogue. And there were some points being made, some. But I walked away feeling like it just kind of keeps perpetuating this really inaccurate assessment about black men in this election. And I feel like they did that for the sake of trying to be, I mean, it wouldn't work. I'm going to say something that is going to be read a different way, but hear me out. Honestly, don't ask black people about voting and who we're going to vote for. That to me is the boring thing. Most black people vote Democrat. They just do, okay? Most black people in national, I'm talking about national races. I'm not talking about federal and all that shit. But most black people in national, when it comes to national races, vote Democrat. We're not voting Republican in mass. We are the most predictable base when it comes to how we show up. If we show up, we're showing up blue. That's just what it is. We're boring in that conversation. However, what's not boring about us is asking us why we choose to vote the way we do. How do we feel about why we vote the way we do? And there's a more nuanced, more interesting take. And that, to me, is the real story. The story isn't if we're going to vote, are we going to vote for Biden this time or are we going for Trump? That's bullshit, right? That's just bullshit. Like, every time one percentage point or some number goes to Trump, it's like, a black voter voted for Trump. Like, yeah, there is always going to be outliers that's going to go in a different direction. Why is it that we're overall expected to be 100%? Those questions are never given to Latino voters. Those questions are never given to white voters. Those questions are never given to any of these other demographics about the vote. But for some reason, one black person steps out of quote unquote line and it becomes this big, you know, unsolved mystery. And that's just kind of fucked up. And honestly, it perpetuates a certain level of racism that I just don't want to watch on TV. Like, I'm not fascinated by it because there is levels of it that's just filled with misinformation. Also, just dumb. Do you ever hear people ever really get into outliers like that? Like outliers are never given this much attention. Like, black voters who vote Republican in national races are strong outliers, okay? Like, find the black women who voted for Trump. There's not that many of them. And they should not be giving an over-index. And see, that's what annoys me about this, is the over-indexing of this quote-unquote uncertain voter, black voter. They're over-indexing it. I'm not saying those people don't exist, but what I'm saying is, why are they getting more fucking press than those who are going to vote for Biden? Like, I'm keeping it 100. I'm voting for Biden on November 5th, 2024. Am I enthusiastic about it? Who fucking cares? Because at the end of the day, a vote is a fucking vote. Okay, the last time I did a fucking yeehaw, I'm going to swag and surf to the polls was in 2012 for Obama. I'm probably not going to do that for a very long time. And you know what? It's O fucking K. Because when I voted for Biden, he got that vote. It was what it was. Do y'all know that gif of Rihanna when she throws the vote to Stephen Hill, the BET exec, and bitch better have my money? You may have not seen the BET Awards scene, but if you ever see this gif of Rihanna, she's dressed up and she just throws this envelope. You know, she swings this envelope at this black guy on the side. That was Rihanna giving her money to to Stephen Hill, who was a former BET exec who I got to meet. like that was a joke, right? But like that gift, I always think of that gift and how I feel about voting for Democrat nationally. Because honestly, let's be clear, both of these candidates are got their problems. But I'm not going to act like Biden is just as bad as Trump. It's just not true, y'all. It's not true. We get 4 years of Trump, I'm losing my right to be married to my husband. I'm not losing my fucking marriage rights. Because to lose my marriage rights means I lose my fucking benefits, which means that I lose my fucking health insurance. Yeah. Yeah, I'm not losing all that because some of y'all want to prove a fucking point. What point are y'all proving? Oh, some of us are not going to vote for Biden to teach the Democratic Party a lesson. And what lesson is that when you're dead? No shade. But what lesson is that when you're dead? What lesson is that? Because let me tell you about dead, since we want to talk, okay? There are millions of Americans that died in 2020 because of the misinformation, the fucked up management, and the sure arrogance of then President Donald Trump. What I am talking about is the pandemic, the misinformation, the fuckery over resources and allocation in our communities, the issues with the vaccine distribution and information in our communities led to the death of millions of people. The blood is on the administration's hands from the way they responded to the COVID-19 pandemic. I know that if Biden would have been president then, if Hillary would have been president then, that less people would have died in that pandemic. And for that, that's all. And let's keep it 100. Here's the problem with some of y'all, because I'm ready to go off. I'm sick of the dialogue because they won't put this on TV. They'll put this dumb shit on TV. And I'm going to snap real quick. Let me snap on this too. What I don't like is that the guys that they had on that show talking about Trump this, Trump that, is the same guys in my barbershop that talk that Trump shit, some of them. And you know what's funny? Ask them the real question, interviewer. Are you registered to vote? When was the last time did you vote? Because I'm going to tell you a fun fact. Most of these dudes talking all this shit about Trump this and Trump that, I bet you they're not registered to vote. I bet you they don't even know where their polling location is. I bet you they don't even know who their state rep or city council person is. Do you know who your state rep is? Do you know who your senator is? Do you know who your ward leader is? Probably not. That's a little hard for some of y'all. But do you all know who your city council person is right now in your district? Do you know who your state rep is right now? Do you know who your state senator is? Do you know who the lieutenant governor is? Do you know who the governor is? Ask those questions to any person that is playing quote unquote devil's advocate. The first question, ask them, are you registered to vote? When last time you voted? Who did you vote for? Who's your state rep? Ask them. They won't have a clue. And you know why? Because they just talking the shits. They vote in their head. They don't vote at ballots and polls. How do I know? Because when I look in my district, right, you can pull up the polling numbers. Trump wasn't even getting over 1,000 votes in my polling area, in my predominantly black district. The numbers were low as fuck. So who was the people? Who are these people that we're worried about, y'all? They don't exist. They're just talking shit. They just want to be on the camera. They just want to be on the camera. They just want camera attention. They just want attention. They just want clout. And I don't blame them. Because the gag is, if I went on Twitter today, a stunt queen, mind you, and I told everybody that I was supporting Trump, guess what's going to happen to me? I'm going to get all the New York Times coverage. I'm going to make appearances on Fox News. I'm going to get a conservative USA fucking bag. I'm going to get invited to travel across the country and spread the gospel about Trump. Trump is going to eventually meet up with me and shake my hand. We're going to have a photo on Mar-a-Lago. I am going to be giving Candace Owens, no relation, a run for her fucking money. And I am going to be fucking famous instantly. Watch out, Pearson. I'm coming. Not really. That's the fucking joke. That's the joke. The joke is, tell me if I'm lying. Tell me right now, if I turn my Twitter account and my Instagram account into a pro-Trump page and fucked with Trump heavy, tell me I would not be richer. The money is there. The bags are there. I know it. I fucking know it. Don't ask me how I know. Because I'm going to tell you a little secret. And I'm not going to name a name. But if you know this person or you know what I'm talking about, if you DM me, I'll tell you who it is if you get it right. I will confirm the person. I'm not going to name the name. But there is a black gay man who I know that is not a Republican. He's really not a Republican. That's the gag. He votes Democrat. But publicly, he praises Trump. He praises Republicans. And this motherfucker is getting book deal offers. He's getting money. He's making cable TV appearances. The motherfucker sold the soul for the bag. And the gag is, he tried to get me on that bag a couple years ago. I said, nah, homie, I can't do it. I can't do it. My mother will beat my ass. No, I ain't doing it. I have courage. I have integrity. Like, I'm not going to do that. It's not that real for me. But the point I'm making is that if you are a grifter or a scammer by nature, you don't give a fuck how you scam or you grift, okay? Wherever the bag is, that's where the fuck you is. Ask Snoop Dogg. Do you believe these rappers? Do you believe these people? These people do what they do for a bag. It's a bag. There's plenty of bags. They're looking for black sellouts. Diamond and Silk, RIP to her, right? But you remember that little duo, right? How they showed up crazy for Trump. They was getting bags. Them two black women was never going to get money like that from the Democratic Party. Because the Democratic Party, respectfully, right, well, not rightfully so, but disgustingly true as we know, they will sit up all day and play in Democrats' face. And you know it's frustrating, right? But listen, that's how Republicans do some of these white people. These white people ain't getting big ass bags. They're not getting them white girls ain't getting the Candace Owens bags. Candace Owens, Tommy Lauren is so jealous of Candace Owens because Candace then carved out, you know, give her 10, second way two, she ain't, she win. Candace Owens knows what she's doing, okay? She has carved a lane of longevity that's longer than I never would have thought. The girl got book deals. She gets speaking tours. She got this show. She's got a whole fucking bag that she's maintained longer than these Democratic girls. While your favorite Democratic girls and Bettys have made money off of the Biden for what they could, then fell off, she's still out here getting her coins, getting bookings. She had a book deal, a New York Times bestseller. Meanwhile, Democrats over here complaining and giving me shit. Like, if I didn't have integrity, that's all I gotta say. If I did not have integrity, you know, one of the past times that some of my friends used to do in college, which sometimes would be annoying, they'd be like, man, if I was a stripper, y'all gotta stop doing that because strippers have talent. Real talent. And y'all can't just go up there and get on pole. You, it takes skills to be a stripper. But they used to always throw that around. Man, if I was a stripper, I could just be a stripper. I'm like, but you don't. Where's your coordination? Can you be a stripper? Could you be a stripper? I don't know. But then I would hear, but the dude thing I hear now that I'd be like, man, I could create an OnlyFans account and make some money. Now that is different. Because OnlyFans, you could put your feet on the internet and you can make some coins. Let me be quiet. There's some people I know, child. They talk about some, child, I be putting my fucking toes on it. And I got some good feet. I be like, shit. I got some nice feet for a dude. I mean, manicure, pedicure. Listen, all I'm saying is that it is easy to sell out when you are in the minority. And there is a special tokenization in coin for those who do. So what I'm saying is to all of these people, white people, do not talk to me about black people in voting. Shut the fuck up. Do not ask me about black people and if they're going to go to the polls. Worry about your fucking people. I'm going to worry about mine. But you're going to worry about yours. Okay? Don't worry about mine. Sometimes I've been hearing white people like, you know, I'm worried. I had to check this white man. He was liberal. But I had to check this white man. He said to me, you know, I worry about this election. You know, I'm hearing that, you know, black voters are going to vote for Trump. That would be devastating. What? I said to this man, I said, first of all, that's not true. And I said, second of all, you should be worried about if more white people go back to Trump. Like the ones who vote for Biden, they leave. Because actually, we're going to get fucked if that happens. The black vote never made the difference between the sway. I mean, we're a lock-in to help with the black voter base. Let's be clear, we do make a difference in chocolate cities. However, overall, white people still determine the outcome of these elections. Y'all need to do y'all part. Save this democracy that benefits y'all more than it benefits me. Just saying. Because y'all are ungrateful. Y'all get most of these rights and benefits, but yet y'all are the ones sabotaging the very republic and democracy that's giving you all more rights than the rest of us. It's such oxymoron, right? It's so oxymoronic that there are people that are like, oh, fuck this country. I'm going to be a traitor to it. But they're being a traitor to a country that's giving them more privilege and rights than everybody else. I'm not saying that black people should be traitors to America. Not saying that at all. But a case could be made more than the cases that's been made elsewhere. I'm just going to leave it at that. So, moving on. I guess, what was my moving on? Before I move on. So, long story short, the media narratives about black male voters is still trash. I thought there was going to be a better take from Tremaine Lee and company, but still not there. If y'all know people out here looking for, you know, legitimate voices to talk about this election, fans, do what you do. That's all I'm saying. I'm here. So, going to do this Ask Ernest this week because Valentine's Day is coming up. It's next week, even though I'll be doing another episode of Ernestie Speaking anyway. But I'm gonna take in some because y'all all want to talk to me about love and relationships and things like that and love and conversations. And I didn't forget that I do want to do a special edition episode this month or soon about relationships. If it's not this month, maybe next month. Because next month is Women's History Month, so maybe that'll be fun. But, you know, we'll get there. This special guest, she knows who she is. She doesn't live that far from me. She's a couple of doors from me. But I want to get together with her and talk about this and do this episode. Because y'all been wanting this relationship episode from me, and I really do want to do it. And I want to do it with a woman. I want to do it with a black woman. And two of us are taking off the market. So I think we're in a position where we can have a healthy dialogue. If you would have asked us to do this interview like 5-6 years ago, I mean, I was deep in my relationship, but she wasn't. She was, I think, beginning to start a relationship. The conversation would be very different. So I'm happy that we're on the other side where we got some maturity. We can have a different kind of conversation altogether. Just saying. You know, we're going to bring a straight one to talk about their perspective. And I'm going to bring a queer perspective. So it's going to be really intersectional. I love it. So, yeah. So this question this week comes from someone. This comes from a guy, which I was like, okay, now this is a cishet. It's a straight, y'all. So let me just start there. So I'm going to read this question. I'm going to have to talk a little bit because people love to give me some descriptions. Now, I know some of y'all like to tell me the names or send me the IGs of the people y'all talking to. That's good tea for me. But y'all know I can't make no references. And y'all know this. And y'all know this. And this person actually told me, don't put the description I'm telling you. Just read it so you can know. And it was a little spicy tea because I actually know the two people involved in this. But I'm just going to read what I know. So, okay. Let me scroll down. Hey, Ernest. Hope everything's all well. See you enjoying the Grammys. Hope you get to read this before you go out to another after party. Turn up. LOL, LOL. Well, yes, I did. I read it. I did read this DM later because I was definitely turning up for the Grammys. But yes. Okay. So they said, so I have a situation. Ship. Parentheses. I've been single for a little bit. Had a long-term breakup with my now ex-girlfriend. Pause. We're going to break that name. But I'm like, oop. We dated for several years on and off, but was really about to get serious in the last year until we decided to break up because of differences in views. What that mean, brother? What that mean? For example, she said she didn't want to have children. I'm pretty much non-negotiable on children. She says she's not willing to leave the city for work. I'm thinking about leaving the city in a couple years if things doesn't change. But lately, I've been missing her, and she clearly has been missing me. A couple of weeks back, she posted, you know, a cryptic post that she had received flowers from what I think is another dude. And it kind of made me a little jealous, not gonna lie. It led to me laughing, seeing a laughing emoji on the story, to which she responded, "Still missing this? ?" I caved in and said, "Yeah," and then didn't respond back. Over the weekend, she FaceTimed me drunk, asking me, "Could she come back over?" I'm trying to not name the club. So I'm trying to, you know, work on that. Oh, Lord. I wonder if she listens to this podcast. Because if she listens to this podcast, baby, he is telling all your tea, honey. He's telling all your tea. Anyway, I told her it was late and that I didn't think it was a good idea. And I got off the FaceTime. But I was up all night thinking about it. I started doing things. Okay, we're not talking about that. I guess he was doing the Drake, y'all. You know, the little churl stick wag. Now I'm thinking about Valentine's Day, and we've been lightly messaging each other, just a good morning here and there, how's life, but nothing serious. But I'm kind of thinking if I could just circle back. What do you think about that? Circling back on your ex, yay or nay? Let me know. Oh, my God. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. Ooh, circling back in time for Valentine's Day. Is it a trap? Is she doing this because she wants something? Well, let me take it back. You started it. So let me get to this. You laughing emoji at her getting flowers. First of all, that's passive aggressive as fuck. Okay, so one chop. Second of all, you felt some type of way that she got flowers. Why are you following her page or her account? See, when you break up with somebody like that, you got to distance yourself, bro. You shouldn't even be following her because that's not healthy. Like, if y'all broke up and y'all had an understanding, then you really do need to, like, get some healthy distance. Let me tell you about me. Okay, I had one situation that forever changed my thought on this topic because for a while, I thought you could coexist with exes. To be quite honest, I don't believe in it. I don't. I'm sorry. I don't. I'm not friends with none of my exes. All of my exes don't exist in my life. Now, let me be clear. You know, some people say, what about parents? Listen, I will tell you this. If you was married and you had children, then yes, I do think there has to be some cohabitation because at the end of the day, you need to co-parent your children. So I do understand situations where adults have children and they have to coexist in that realm. However, that being said, baby, it's not going to be no Vanessa Williams, Rick Fox living in my house while I got my other man living in the house. That's some badass shit. But I wouldn't do that. Like, that's not my life. Like, I just think that unless there's kids involved, I just don't know why there needs to be a coexistence with a partner. Now, you could have a weird situation, which is very weird, interesting. I think of like what I call the Jackie Harry rule, which if y'all know Jack Hay, the Emmy Award winning actress, who was in 227. She was married to a man that later came out to her as gay. They're friends now. That's different. Listen, you find out something like that, you know, shit happens. Hopefully we don't see that happen as much in our society because, you know, people can now, you know, hopefully be living their truth. But like, that's different, you know, and they had a bond, they're cool, life has moved on. However, outside of that type of situation, I don't see it. Like, I think, you know, I personally don't see it. Like, I personally don't see it. I think that, you know, people should, you know, people should be able to make those differences, you know. I think about Star Jones, for example. You know, her ex-husband that she was married to 4 years, he came out as bisexual many years later. who, and interesting enough, I met him at the Grammys. I met him at the Grammys this weekend. And it's interesting because he came out, you know, in 2017. And I think now they're cool. I think they now have a friendship. They have a, you know, they're in a good space now. But I remember when he first was, they were dating, people were just looking at them like, you know, but, you know, life moves on. But I say all to say that unless it's those type of circumstances, I just don't see the point. The reason why, I'm going to sound a little selfish saying this, but my whole mindset is, you know, in the words of, well, oh, I don't like him no more. He's a problem. I was going to say, we can't be friends. That's Trey Songz song. But I wish I never did it, though. And I wish I never listened to him anymore. I don't. But if I'm dating some, if I dated somebody and we decide to break up, I don't know what, why I would get back with them. Like, if I broke up and we had a real understanding, move the fuck on. Like, I know that's hard. I'm not saying you got to get with somebody immediately. Honestly, it's not healthy to. People always say the best way to get over somebody is get under somebody. Well, I mean, if you want to get under some sheets and have some temporary experiences, I mean, knock yourself out. But I just do feel like the need to circle back, that whole circle back shit, I just feel like that's just not healthy. It's not a healthy thing to do. Because the reality is that if you really like the person, y'all really was, if it was really meant to be, you all would find a way to work it through. I believe that. I do. I am that kind of person. I am the person that if the love is real and you really do like the person, you really do love the person, then you're gonna swim through. You're gonna fight through it until you can't anymore. And when you decide that you have, you know, moving mountains, if it feels like it's moving mountains in the words of Usher, then that's the point where you got to hold it and fold it. You got to fold it. You know, you got to be able to put your foot down and say, you know what? It can't happen. We can't do this. We can't make this work. Like, it's not going to work, right? That boldness, that audacity, that courage, like, that's the real shit. That's the real shit. And you got to have the ability to be able to stand 10 toes down on that. For real, for real. You got to have the ability to stand 10 toes down on that. Otherwise, it's going to be a no-go. It's going to be a no-go. It's going to be a no-go. It's just going to be a no-go. I can't hold you. It's not going to work. And so you have to have the ability to articulate those feelings, to be able to know how to manage those expectations, to be able to know how to work on it, right? And so I'm talking about this from a personal place, you know, that some of y'all, no shade, might be breaking up with people too soon. Y'all just ready to throw in the towel. Every time you don't get your way, you don't like something, you ready to break up with somebody. And then that's why you be circling the block, because a lot of times y'all just be ready to throw in the towel over any little thing, and that's how you circle the block. Because let me tell you something. After I broke up with somebody, baby, there was no circling the block. I was done. I was done. Okay, except one time. So let me tell you, digmatization is real. But let's be clear. So there was a situation. This was long before Mr. Johnson and I. There was a guy in college, and Amanda, Dr. Parks, my friend Jamarcus. Y'all know who I'm talking about. A couple of y'all, actually. Nina, Samantha. Y'all know who I'm talking about, too. But it was this guy. He was real tall. He was a handsome man. Socially awkward, but handsome. We dated, you know, our relationship was really rocky. And the best way to describe our relationship was we found love. Oh, that song, I can't even listen to that song without having some memory of how chaotic our relationship was. It wasn't no physical abuse, you know, because I don't play that. But it was emotionally abusive. It was definitely emotionally abusive. There was, I guess you could say it was verbally abusive, you know, which is not a laughing matter, but you know, it was just toxic. We were just toxic. We were young. We were dumb. We were horny. We were in college. It was just angst. But there was just, you know, also the desire, the attraction. And I think it was a relationship that was more driven by sexual attraction than spiritual, emotional compatibility.
What was making us connect was not actual compatibility. It was actually just attraction. Like, you know, we could argue and all that, but when we was, you know, we had a thing. It worked out in that place, in that department. But emotionally, you know, intellectually, spiritually, there was no compatibility. And so, you know, the funny part about us was that when we took breaks from each other, we forgot how much we annoyed each other. And so then, and in times of distance, because, you know, out of mind, out of sight, for me, it wasn't that he was out of mind. He was out of sight, but he was never out of my mind. And so when that time would pass, I started thinking to myself, oh, well, I'm not burned. You know, I didn't get fucked over completely. I mean, yeah, you know, we had that argument, but I mean, I wasn't totally wrecked, you know. I mean, you know, maybe with this distance, he didn't went to time out and thought about him, what he was doing. So then you circle back and you think, okay, this time it's going to be better. It don't get better. It don't get better. It don't get better. So after dealing with this shit time and time again, I got to a point where I was like, this ain't gonna change. I need to actually get up and move on. I cannot keep doing this. I can't keep doing this escapade. I gotta take myself out the equation. I gotta eliminate this situation. So I did. I did. I basically, you know, I broke it off for good. And I held myself accountable to it. I unfollowed them on social media. I think I blocked their number, or I just, you know, put their number on do not answer, some shit like that. And I just really distanced myself. And during that time of isolation, you know, I met other people. I got familiar and got used to, you know, figuring it out, and hope that another person who could love me and make love to me better would fill that void. And fun story, February 13th of 2013, okay, nearly 10 years ago, it's coming up. That became the reality. So I'm talking from over 10 years. That could be you, sir. Don't circle that block. Don't spin that block. I know it's tempting. I know it's tempting. But get familiar with your hand. Learn yourself. Touch your body. Okay. In the words of Mariah, but no, she said, you touch your body. No one's touching your body. You touch your body. You get familiar with yourself. You go meet somebody new. You get you somebody's, and don't even think about marriage or anything serious. Just go out and get you some new bodies. And that drunk FaceTime and shit, you need to shut that shit down, because when you get you a new person, you ain't going to want that old baggage in your situation. When I got ready for my future husband, my now husband now, but my, who was the, at that time, I had to make sure I didn't have no loose ends. No ex in my past can act like there's something still going on between us. None of my exes can act like there's any access to me, because when I got in my new relationship, they were gone. Okay? Vamoose. And that's the problem with some of y'all. Some of y'all still want to hold on. And then when y'all get in something new, you got your old shit coming to bite your ass. You got to clean the stuff. You got to clean the runway. You got to make space. You cannot hold on to this. You cannot be a hoarder. Let that girl go. You got to let her go. You got to move on. You have to move on for yourself and for her. Because here's the thing. The things that y'all discuss, it don't seem like she's changing her mind. Her body, her choice. If she doesn't want to have kids, that is her choice, right? And you can't convince her. And if she just decides, maybe she changes her mind. Maybe she doesn't. But that's something that at the end of the day is her right, right? And if that's a non-starter for you, it's not going to change. If she wants to stay in Philly and don't want to relocate, and you feel like that's a no dealer for you, then stick to your guns. I'm going to tell you something, though, to be honest. Sometimes people change. Sometimes you will change. Your perspective might change. You may actually not even want kids down the road. Don't ask me how I know. I'm just saying that with Mr. Johnson and I, when we was first together, he was big on kids. Oh, 6 kids, he said. Me, I was like, ooh, 6 kids. Ooh, we're going to have all this money for these kids. I mean, I was like, kind of like, eh. Okay, fast forward some years later. He like, who got time? I said, I don't. And your ass don't. Who got time for kids? You want to do a nanny? You know, like we're not in a space right now where we can see kids. And the cool thing is about us being, you know, gay is that we can choose when we want to set the clock on that, and we can move it up if we adopt. So shit, if I'm 40, I might want a kid that's 16, because then, you know, I could be able to, you know, but I don't know if I want a kid that old. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe we'll be foster parents. Maybe we just, you know, create, rate, get some good kids out the system. I don't know. But there's different alternatives we can consider in a way that does not. Because I was always in my mind thinking, ooh, if we have anything with genetic, oh my goodness, it's going to be a baby. And then, you know, I don't want to be an old parent. You know, I want to be able to send a kid off to college and still be able to get it loose and popping. I don't want to get an AR. Mentally where I'm at with it is, if a kid is not in the forefront by my age of 40, you about to get a gunkle, okay? Because then by then, my young brother, not my little brother, but my young brother will clearly be, he'll be at the shit. Let me see, I'm 32, 8 years added by him. He'd be about 28, 30-ish. He might have a child by then. He might have get ready to have a kid by then. So I'll be somebody's gunkle. You know, I'll be a gay uncle for them. Or some godparent to other people's kids, that folks of mine that might have kids. But I've been telling myself, if I don't get a kid by 40, if we don't figure that out by 40, then we're just going to be gunkles. And that is completely fine with me. You know, but anything can happen. Anything can change. If I get really, really rich soon, if I get real, real rich, you know, a kid will definitely be in the conversation much sooner. I just do take parenting seriously. I take parenting seriously so much that I know what it takes to be a parent, because I've been raised by a good parent. So I know what it looks like. And I don't got it in me. I don't got it in me right now. I can't see it in me. Like, I look at my mom like, damn, you had me at 20. How did you do it? Because mentally right now, I'm 30. I'm 32. And I'm like, how the fuck am I? I'm like, what? Shit, I got to cook for another mouth. I got to go to parent-teacher conferences. Shout out to real parents raising their kids. That is a real job. That is a real job. I feel like the older I get, the more I appreciate people that are parents. Like, actual parents. Like, you take care of your kid. You paying bills. You feeding people. Like, that's real, you know? And for those who step in and raise kids, like, that is a serious-ass job. I don't think a lot of mothers and fathers, people get credit for that, but I'm in a tirade right now, but I'm just thinking about, like, damn. All that to say is that no circling the block. We're not spinning the block. We're not circling the block. We're not going back to exes. Leave exes behind, okay? Just stop doing it, because when the shit goes south again, here you go, crying and I should have never, shut up, okay? Cut it out. No more circling the block. No more spinning the block in 2024. Okay? If you ain't got a Valentine, you and your hand a Valentine. Hurt your dick. Okay? That's my ask, Ernest. That's my advice. All right. So into lighter fare. Movies, okay, that I've been watching. I haven't watched too many movies, y'all, because I've been out here and living my best life. But I did catch this great Netflix documentary called The Greatest Night in Pop, which basically talks about 1985 in January. All of these big stars at the time, you know, gathered to record We Are the World. And the behind-the-scenes drama to produce this epic song is fascinating. I thought it was going to be a bore. Y'all, it is really good. It's really short. It's 90 minutes. I mean, you got Dionne Warwick, Lionel Richie, Bruce Springsteen, Cyndi Lauper, Huey Lewis, Kenny Loggins, Michael Jackson, Stevie Wonder, like Smokey Robinson, all these legends that were a part of this documentary, but a part of this process. Now, some of these people, of course, as you all know, has passed away, but they talk about some of the drama behind the scenes. I mean, I don't want to tell too much, but like Bob Dylan was going on, okay? It was spicy. It was spicy. You know, Bob Dylan was a mess, by the way. That's all I will say. There was some moments, but I will say that Bob Dylan, woo, a mess. But I found a more, I mean, I thought I couldn't love Stevie Wonder more, but my God, Stevie Wonder is just incredible. Just a breathtaker. So highly recommend The Greatest Night in Pop. It's on Netflix. Check it out. Okay, music. One word. Hiss. Okay. Hiss has broken major records. It's that Megan Thee Stallion diss track. We thought it was going to charge. We thought it was going to do something. And, you know, I told y'all stuff was going on. And it was weird. And, you know what I'm saying? It's weird that what's been going on with all the drama. And I've been telling people left and right. I said to people, there's some stuff going on. And we need to get to the bottom of it. That was the tea that I was telling people. And folks was just like, you know, is my predictions right about this song? Well, it was right. Meg Thee Stallion debuted at number one on the Billboard Hot 100. Okay. This is her third number one following Savage Remix featuring Beyonce and WAP, where she was featured with Cardi B. This is her first solo number one. She is the third woman rapper following Lauryn Hill and Nicki Minaj to debut on a Billboard Hot 100 at number one with a solo record. Lauryn Hill did it for That Thing. Nicki Minaj did it for Super Freaky Girl. And now Meg Thee Stallion joins the ranks for a diss track. For a diss record, the diss record was so infectious that it was able to do numbers like that. I am so just in awe. I am impressed. I am so happy for her. She deserves this. The history that was made on this record. So let me say this. Let me tell you all the big hits for this. So it is the first ever solo female rap song to debut at number one on the Billboard Global 200. It's number one on iTunes in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30, 31, 32, 33, 34, 35, 36. 36 countries. 36 countries internationally. It is number one on Apple streaming globally in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 14 countries. Okay. It is the number one song on Apple Global, Apple US, Spotify US, YouTube, iTunes Video, Billboard Hot 100. I mean, the charts are ridiculous. It's the fastest selling song of 2024. It's over 100,000 physical singles. It is the biggest U.S. streaming week of the year. It is the biggest U.S. sales week of the year. It is the biggest Spotify first week for a solo female rap song in Spotify history. It is the first solo female rap song to simultaneously chart at number one. Meg Thee Stallion's biggest solo sales week ever. She did it. She did her big one. And let me tell you, there's been a lot of things said about her, lots of critiques. And I have been one of those people that have had, you know, quality concerns about some of her raps. You know, sometimes I do feel like some of her raps are a little repetitive, or her flows or her production beats, you know. There's been a lot of things said. But at this point, you know, it is a lot of things being said. And I do feel like, you know, it's This is a big deal. This is a big deal. And honestly, it is the David Goliath. Now, I don't think that, you know, per se, Nikki is over. I don't think that she completely ended Nikki. I'm not that delusional. But what I will say is I do think this is a big, major blow to the Minaj group. And what Nikki has done is a big thing. What Nikki has done is that Nikki has focused on her tour. She has a tour coming up in less than a month. Nikki is focused on her tour, as she should. I'm happy that she's focused on her tour, because that's what she should be focused on. She shouldn't be focused no more on taunting and going berserk on Nikki. On Meg Thee Stallion. Maybe this is a moment for her to just take a breather and breathe and leave us alone. Because all that taunting, all that behavior, I think is what actually drew the attention to Meg, so Meg can have her moment. I feel like if Nikki actually didn't give it that much attention and didn't give it that much promotion, this wouldn't have backfired. Bigfoot was a fucking big flop. It shouldn't even be called Bigfoot. It should be called Big Flop. We're going to call it Big Flop because that's really what it was. It was Big Flop, okay? It didn't move anything. And all the hype that she was trying to give it just never equates to nothing. All that Twitter, you know, history maker, you know, these Twitter accounts that make fake history and lies about their faves. I mean, they're not credible at all. Like, I hate when people send me the DMs about what this Twitter account is saying. Unless it's coming directly from Billboard or coming directly from Spotify, I don't want to hear none of that shit. Or the industry labels themselves that put out the information. I don't want to hear that shit, right? So, you know, for all that talk about Bigfoot and this and Big Flop, all that Nicki Minaj mess, it flopped. As it should have. So, it was good to see that. It was good to see. I'm happy for her. Other things I'm happy about is... Justin Timberlake, it's not happening. You know, it's not happening. Justin Timberlake's new single, Selfish, people were hype. I thought that there was going to be some things, you know, that you know, this new album, but he has not been able to recuperate from his career. A lot of people thought that, you know, that there was enough time for him to be able to, but it's not happening. It's not happening. This single did not do that well. It did not chart that high for a debut from Justin Timberlake. Like, he had a Saturday Night Live appearance, and people are trying to give him some praise. They said that, you know, Justin Timberlake scored his highest Hot 100 debut in 6 years with Selfish. It debuted in the top 20. It debuted at number 19. But the thing is that, you know, the you know, it's like, okay. But what's been interesting is that Britney Spears' song, Selfish, tops Justin Timberlake's Selfish in sales during his first full week, thanks to fans. Is that wild? That literally... You know, the craziest thing is that, you know, Justin Timberlake has a new album coming out called Everything I Thought It Was. And what's been messy is that, according to the sales, Britney Spears' Selfish garnered 397,000 on-demand streams. And just sold under 10,000 digital copies. And she has surpassed, you know, Timberlake's own Selfish in the process. That's very telling. He debuted at number 19. Number 19 on the chart. Justin Timberlake, a white pop star, debuting at number 19 with a whole music video, an SNL appearance, all these appearances in press. It's real. The comeback is not coming back. Sexy, I mean, sexy, the sexy is, you know, he says he's bringing sexy back. Well, he's not sexy no more. So, anymore. So, it's not happening. But we love to see it. So, I've been catching him on TV. First of all, I want to say that I'm looking forward to Abbott Elementary coming back. I love me some Abbott. It's the third season, the Emmy Award winning, you know, show is back. I'm looking forward to it. It's interesting because it's not going to win Best Comedy. I think the Bear is going to win for season two that just passed because it's just, you know, I don't know what Abbott Elementary can do this third season that's going to be able to make it win over the Bear's run right now. So that's very telling. But, you know, Abbott Elementary season three, I'm super excited about it. I wonder if season three could win the Golden Globe for Best Comedy if the Bear season three doesn't get come out by then. I'm just wondering how the flow is going to work with production. Just saying. I know they're going to start filming later this month, but I don't know if this new season is going to be ready in time for Golden Globe consideration, which means that if Abbott Elementary is really good as a comedy, it could win. But nowadays with TV, you just never know who's going to come out with something that could be better than the next. Because I just knew that Abbott Elementary is going to win Best Comedy this time around. But then the Bear kind of fell out of nowhere and just, you know, took over. So you just never know nowadays with comedy. Drama is interesting because now that Succession's out the way, I don't know what's going to be the new hot drama that everybody's going to be watching and talking about. You know, now that Succession's out the way. You know, Lord of the Rings is out. Breaking Bad's over. So, you know, it's always fun. Like, some of these shows will have a 3-4 season run of winning, and then you just know they're going to always win. But now, these seasons are getting smaller, so you just don't know who's going to take over. But it's interesting to watch. But I'm looking forward to watching a new season of Abbott. Another big show I've been watching is that I've been low-key. It's 8 seasons. It's a limited release, but it's called Feud, Capote versus the Swans. And so it's new. It's the second installment in Ryan Murphy's Feud anthology, which the first one was Betty versus Joan, which was really good. But this Capote versus the Swans is really good, okay? So this is about Truman Capote, who is an acclaimed writer. He surrounded himself with the most elite women. He's, you know, Truman Capote was gay. If you want to see an incredible performance, an Oscar-winning performance, the late, great Philip Seymour Hoffman played him in a film that came out like over 15 years ago called Capote. Great film. Highly recommended. But acclaimed writer was he was. He wrote In Cold Blood, which was an iconic film. And it was good. I mean, iconic book. Really great book. In Cold Blood was iconic. He was good friends with Harper Lee, who of course wrote the book To Kill a Mockingbird. And in the film Capote, which came out in he won Best Actor, Catherine Keener played Harper Lee in a great performance that was also nominated for Best Supporting Actress. She didn't win, but it was an incredible performance. Just love my movies. But anyway, Truman Capote, you know, basically, you know, hung out with these really glamorous rich socialites, which he nicknamed the Swans because they were beautiful and they were just distinguished. These women, you know, it was a bunch of them, but he was around them. They were rich and they were glamorous, and it was about 6 of them, and basically, let me tell you who's playing who. So Tom Hollander is playing Truman Capote. The women that are playing in this cast is Naomi Watts, Diane Lane, Chloe 70, Calista Flockhart. I mean, these are some badass actresses playing these roles. Demi Moore is in it. It's some major players in this. So I highly recommend it. So anyway, back to the background of this. You know, he's into these women. He puts himself in their lives. He's a big friend. But then he betrays them by writing this very, what people call a thinly veiled fictionalization of their lives, basically expose their intimate secrets. And when an expert of this book comes out called Answered Prayers, which is supposed to be his big, huge, grand book, which it was an excerpt of his book that it was published in Esquire at the time, it destroys his relationship with them. And they basically banish him from their high society. And they go into, and he gets into a place of self-destruction. He never recovers. This is based on a true story. Molly Ringwald is in this film. It is good. I mean, this miniseries. So the first two episodes came out. I think the third episode is out now. But it's 8 episodes, and I highly recommend it. It is so juicy. You can stream it on Hulu. It's on Hulu. Or if you like to watch stuff live, it's on FX. So you can either watch it on FX or you can stream it on Hulu. But I highly recommend this miniseries. It's really good. So that's that. But as far as everything else goes, I'm looking forward to this special edition episode, live recording with the Lip Brothers at Hard Rock Cafe. I'm super excited. It's going to be a wonderful production. Lots of great conversation. Lots of chatter. Lots of buzz. I cannot wait to see a lot of you all live. If y'all got copies of The Case of Cancel Culture, I will sign your copies. Bring some swag. We'll take some selfies. We'll have a good time. I can't wait. Love you all. And as always, be well and be...
Earnestly Speaking is recorded in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and can be found on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts. To stay up to date with the latest on the show, follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Mr. Ernest Owens. Use the hashtag Earnestly Speaking to tell me what you thought about this episode, and check out my website at ErnestOwens.com.